Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana, what I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Hello, welcome in a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly is in studio with me, and we are glad to be here on this rainy, gleary, gloomy, droomy, whatever word we can make up Thursday to be here to talk some IU basketball and other sports stuff in Southern Indiana. And we've got some fun stuff to talk about, Lee. Romeo Langford last night got the start for Boston. So we'll talk about that. That's very interesting for a number of reasons. And actually played pretty decent, I thought, in his start last night and a lot of other things we want to catch up today. So I kind of got word yesterday in one of Romeo's former teammates at New Albany, I guess maybe that communicates pretty closely with him, said, hey, Romeo's going to get the start tonight. And, you know, you think, well, okay, maybe that's the case, maybe it's not, but he did, and as it got closer to game time, the starting lineup was announced, and he was in it, and his picture was there, and so pretty cool stuff to see him be introduced for the first time, and hopefully the first of many, many times in his NBA career as a starter last night. Of course, it's interesting because Romeo Lee has been up and down and up and down between Maine and Boston, their G League team. But also on top of that, the trade deadline in the NBA is today at 3 o'clock, I believe. And I had mentioned a couple times this week that Romeo's name has been mentioned, but a lot of players' names have been mentioned in potential trades. And I really haven't seen it by anyone that I would consider a real legitimate mainstream NBA person. Not that something can't formulate or can't be working behind the scenes, but it was interesting that he got the start last night. A lot of people, I think, took that as, well, they're going to showcase him a little bit to see if they can solidify or sell him on a late trade maybe. But I think, and I could be wrong, he could be traded later today, but I believe that if you look at their injured reserve list yesterday and who's out and who's sick, there are some reasonably concerning injuries right now for Boston with a number of starters and key players, which is what I believe is the reason, obviously, last night that he was able to get the start.
Yeah, I think there could be any number of factors, none of which I have access to. I do want to give a shout out to Steve LeDuc. He posted on Facebook about Romeo starting. And because of him, I had about 10 minutes to locate the channel and watch. So, Steve, thanks. Big thank you for that. It was fun. A lot of people were chatting on Facebook about the starting. And so I think probably the viewership around here was pretty good last night, the Celtics game. But he looked nervous, but he looked good, I thought. I think his role is to stay out of the way of the stars of the team at this point, and that's what you would expect. I thought he did a nice job, and I thought as he went along, he seemed to get more into the flow. So hopefully good things coming for the young man, and certainly glad to see him get a start.
Some interesting things from Romeo's start last night. First off, when you start and you play some minutes, a lot more than normal, you're going to be one of the focal points after the game. So he got a little interview time with one of the Boston courtside reporters, which was neat. And he said that he texted his mom and dad, Tim and Sabrina, to tell him that he was starting. He was excited and wanted to share that with his parents. And his mom replied, you mean you're starting in Maine? I don't understand. And I don't even know that, according to what Romeo said, they realized that he was with Boston because it wasn't that long ago that he went back down to Maine and was playing with them, getting some minutes, getting some time, looking pretty good. And then, of course, last night back at Boston. He'd been back at Boston before last night, but gets the start. And then also Gordon Hayward. This was pretty cool for me. Gordon Hayward, Brownsburg native, Indiana guy. You know, Indiana fan or not, you can't help and remember and love what he did for Brownsburg, number one, and for Butler, number two. That was really some fun times there for Butler basketball. And by the way, they had another big win at home last night, did Butler, despite the roof leaking at Hinklefield House. But, you know, to hear Gordon Hayward and see him start alongside fellow Indiana native Romeo Langford was cool. And then to see Gordon after the game, he was asked a couple things about Romeo and had really good comments. And I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have the transcript in front of me, but he said, you know, he's a guy who thinks he can be successful in the league. He expects him to be a star in this league down the road. And that's exciting to hear from someone like Gordon Hayward that has really found a home at Boston and really is doing well in the NBA ranks. So I thought both of those were neat items last night after the game. And, of course, Romeo's performance last night, I'm trying to pull the box score up here as we're talking. His performance last night, not bad at all. I thought defensively he did a good job on, help me with the name there of the guy he was assigned to. Good player. He did well with that. Let's see, 28 minutes last night. He was 3 of 4 from the field. He shot no three-pointers, which is interesting. He had, one rebound, two turnovers, one block. He was a plus 8 on the plus-minus scale, and he had 6 points in the game. And here's a little interesting note. Brian Sullivan sent this to you and I just earlier. Boston, with Romeo in the lineup, which would mean when Romeo actually gets in the game, whether it's cleanup minutes, whether it's a starting role like last night, an active player that gets in, Boston is now 13-2 when Romeo has played. So there's a good way to spin it for Coach Stevens in Boston. 5-0, Brian Sullivan writes, when he plays at least 15 minutes. So that Romeo factor that brought so many wins to New Albany, some people may say he lost a little of that magic to bring wins to Indiana his freshman year in college, but it's worked well for Romeo at Boston, even though his playing time always hasn't been what we'd like.
It is just amazing to me to flip on the game with the Celtics and see Romeo out on the floor. So much fun. I probably the next closest thing way back in the day were some of the local guys that played in the ABA and different things. But been a long time since we've had a local guy that's made that. And being a big Romeo fan, really liking the young man and his the way he handles himself, it's certainly fun to catch him on the court.
And, of course, one other Romeo note. I promise we're going to go on to cover some other things today, although we are going to have a lot more Romeo talk, and I'll tell you why here in just a minute. But remember, was it 2 years ago on this date or this game tonight, New Albany is at Jennings County. Romeo torched the Panthers for 63 points, I believe was the total, which was an outburst unlike any I had seen in the high school ranks. So I'm obviously going back to Jennings County tonight. We'll smile and think about that. That was a crazy game, a crazy shooting night for Romeo Langford. But fun last night to see him get the start. Let's get into the show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Here in the first segment, we'll do our Zaxby's headlines. As always, we'll recap some of the top IU and Southern Indiana sports news of the day coming up here in just a few minutes for this Thursday. Then later, segment two, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. He always joins us on Thursdays, and we get the opportunity to talk IU with him, and there's plenty to talk about heading into the weekend. The Big Ten Conference we're going to get to in just a moment. Another crazy night of Big Ten play last night. We'll cover that. We'll talk IU. We'll talk IU-Purdue this weekend for Indiana, and a lot more with Alex when he joins us. Then the final segment today, very interested to have a different guest, a new guest join us here on the program. And I had no idea when I scheduled this guest, Lee. I knew you would be with me in studio. Had no idea that Romeo would get the start yesterday that he did. I had no idea that really in the, at the time that the trade deadline, I didn't put two and two together, was looming. Although, yes, we'll talk about that. I'm not sure it's going to affect Romeo. You never know. But we're going to be joined by Chris Grinham. Chris is the Celtics writer for Forbes Sports, and you might have just recently seen or read a story from Chris if you follow Romeo Langford coverage pretty closely from Boston, because he had a tremendous piece within the last couple days about the Maine Red Claws G League franchise and how Boston and how Brad Stevens, the head coach at Boston, how they view that franchise, how they want to use that franchise, how they see the G League helping the Boston team. And it talks a lot about Romeo in that story going up and down. Taco Fall as well has been another one of the headline players that has made some journeys, lots of them, back and forth between Boston and Maine. So Chris is going to join us. Chris was at the game last night. He was at the media availability yesterday when obviously the word probably swirling that Romeo would get the start. And so he's going to join us in segment three from Boston to talk a lot of Romeo Langford, some Boston Celtics, about his story. And I'm going to ask him, I think we have to, about the trade deadline and what are the rumors as we enter the last, what, 3 hours plus of the NBA trade deadline with Romeo Langford. So all of that coming up here today. That's the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Visit your local Honey Baked Ham store in New Albany and receive $20 off any bone-in ham. It's now $20 off any bone-in ham. Also, buy one, get one free ham bones, all for a limited time at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. I didn't know this, Lee, but ham bones must be a very popular item. I was told by the people at Honey Baked Ham, they said, we want to mention a new special. We want to mention ham bones. And I said, ham bones? Really? They said, you cannot believe the number of people that want to know when we have ham bones available. So if ham bones are your thing, oh, Lee Kelly wants one. He'll be there after the show. If ham bones are your thing, Honey Baked Ham in New Albany have them.
Bought one not too long ago to make soup.
There you go.
And, you know, I didn't realize they had them. I just happened to be in there buying some of the delicious ham, but had looked at a recipe and it said you need a ham bone with some meat on it. And I said, by the way, do you have? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got so made delicious soup. So
there you go.
Good deal.
What a testimonial for Honey Baked Ham ham bones. And you can get that today at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Okay, real quick, you can interact with the show, submit a comment or question. It might get read on the air. You can follow me on Twitter at Hoosier Hills, all one word, Hoosier Hills. Send me your question. You can tweet me, DM me. You can also follow the show on Facebook. On Facebook, search The Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You can leave a message there, and you can also get updates on the show if you follow us as well. And we'll be looking for some good questions today, not only for Alex on Indiana, but for Chris on Boston and Romeo Langford. Let's quickly jump into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. Big Ten last night. Purdue score was at 102 points.
Thought it was 104, but I'm not positive. Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. They had 61 points in the first half against a solid Iowa team. I think you could say Purdue is the favorite in that game at home at Mackey Arena last night. But to blow them out in the manner that they did, probably a little concerning, I would think, to Archie Miller and, of course, Indiana as they get ready to play a Boilermaker team that has had some struggles. Purdue's maybe getting better. They're going to need a couple big wins, I think, to get in the NCAA tournament. But Indiana, I think, has to take care of business at home against Purdue at Assembly Hall. And to see Purdue put up 104 points, even Tommy Luce, Jeffersonville product, former Jeff coach Joe Luce's son, he had a three very late in the game when things were out of hand for Purdue. But, wow, 61 points in the first half, 100-plus points in the game for Purdue, an amazing performance, offensive output last night by Purdue, no question about it. Other things, jumping to a high school note for a minute. This didn't catch me off guard too bad, but definitely some interesting news that will spur some discussions and some thoughts from our local principals and athletic directors about what is next for the Hoosier Hills Conference, because last night the Madison School Board voted 5-0
to withdraw Madison from the Hoosier Hills Conference. This move will happen not at the end of this year, but at the end of next year. That would be the 2020-2021 high school athletic season, of course, ending in the spring with high school baseball and high school softball that goes really after the conclusion of school. Madison said they are not going at this time to another conference. For now, they will be independent. I think that is tough. I think that will be a temporary thing for Madison, specifically for football and other sports. Maybe you could get by in basketball and some others. But an interesting move, Madison, a 3A school. Madison, a school that's not growing much at all and really has been overmanned in a lot of the sports in the Hoosier Hills Conference. And, of course, Lee, I can go back to my childhood. You can go back some years ago when you were broadcasting a lot of games. Madison, I can remember some unbelievable basketball teams and some really good baseball teams that stand out to me at Madison over the years, but we haven't seen anything of the like from Madison now for a number of years, at least competing in the Hoosier Hills Conference.
No, they have, I can't say all sports, but most sports, they've had a tough time in the Hoosier Hills Conference, and a little surprised that the school board, that's an unusual school board up there. I've had some friends that worked at Madison and known the athletic directors through the years. Great people. And, man, took a lot of abuse of sorts from the school board. So they agreed 5-0. That surprised me right off the bat. But then looking at comments on Facebook last night about that situation, right off the bat, people said, well, Silver Creek should jump into the Hoosier Hills Conference. Well, Silver Creek is probably the largest school in the Mid-Southern Conference where they are now. They would be one of the smaller, if not the smallest, school in the Hoosier Hills Conference. I'm not sure they want to jump into that. People were saying Madison should get into the Mid-Southern. Well, I'm not sure there will be an invitation from the Mid-Southern to Madison because they would be one of the largest schools. And if I'm one of the smaller schools in that conference, if I'm an Austin, a Scottsburg, a Clarksville, or whatever, I don't know that I want Madison in there. So I think independent, that's probably where they're going to be in the beginning. There are a lot of conferences on that eastern side of Indiana that I don't know anything about. They may fit perfectly in one of those, but it's going to be interesting. Surely they've done some homework and looked at where they could fit into a conference.
You know, I've had lots of questions about, hey, what do you think the Hoosier Hills Conference will do? Have you talked to any of your athletic director friends? What are they saying? Who are some of the schools they considered? And really, you know, Jeff Callahan said this last night in a story that Justin Soakland had. They don't have to add anybody. At one time, the Hoosier Hills was a 7-team conference, but it is a little odd number for sure when it comes to scheduling and things. So a lot of talk out there in social media land about Columbus North. Yes, they would make probably logistically a really good fit, size-wise, competitive-wise, would be, I think, just a tremendous addition. If I was an AD in the conference, that would be who I would go absolutely after. However, I've been told, and I know the AD at Columbus North, I could probably shoot him a text and ask him, I've been told that Columbus North and Columbus East have an agreement that they will not play in the same conference. Again, that's just hearsay for now, but I've been told that. Other schools that you hear, you go back to the days when Bloomington North was in the Hoosier Hills Conference. Could they be a possibility? And maybe Bloomington South. I think there could be interest and a push maybe both ways to see Bloomington South come into the Hoosier Hills Conference. So it'll be interesting. There's some time to figure it out. It could stay as is with 7 when Madison drops out, but definitely something to think about. And I notice people get restless, not just Madison people, but these conferences, you know, this is what makes Indiana basketball great. These conferences are like historical. You know, there's very rarely been changes or additions or subtractions in conferences, especially here in Southern Indiana. There have been some conferences in Indiana where they switch the names, they trade teams, all sorts of crazy stuff happens. It hasn't happened here. It's another reason I love this area. I love the history of basketball in this area and what it means. That Hoosier Hills, that Mid-Southern Conference, some of the Southern Athletic Conference, those championships to win that, mean a lot. So I sense a little concern from everybody. What's going to happen, and will somebody replace them? And everybody has an opinion on who it should be. Of course, ultimately, it'll come down to who's interested. And, of course, the athletic directors and principals that make up the committee there for the Hoosier Hills Conference. But fun times it'll be to see what happens with that. The interesting thing is Madison basketball looks to be on a comeback. They've had a really good competitive year. Very happy for Sharon Wilkerson, former IU guy. He's coaching them up. He does a tremendous job. He's got some young talent to work with as well, which is exciting. And I know he's really excited about the future. So maybe Madison, from a basketball standpoint, is getting to a point where they could compete. But other sports, I understand football is a big one, obviously, that maybe doesn't make sense in the Hoosier Hills. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, and two things. Last night, Jennings County's name came up. Oh, Jennings County's considering it, and they may be. I have no insight into that. But I think Jennings County has been more representative in that conference. The other thing is, a lot of people think that just because Madison's getting out of the conference, they're going to come off the schedule of a lot of our local teams. I don't see that happening. I see them continuing to play the schools, for the most part, in the Hoosier Hills Conference, along with, I think they play Silver Creek, Charlestown, and some of the other schools in the Mid-Southern. So I'm not sure schedule-wise a lot of immediate changes are going to come about unless they would join another conference and have to add those schools to their schedule.
Well, I would say Madison hopes that some of the Hoosier Hills schools will continue to play them until they make a decision to join another conference or not. But that will be interesting because the Madison game, unless schools chose to just keep Madison, could be replaced with the new Hoosier Hills school, which would wipe out a lot of games for Madison if that happened in basketball. But, again, this is bigger than basketball. Football, many, many sports this affects, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Those are our headlines presented by Zaxby's for this Thursday program. Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. We're headed to a quick commercial break. Alex Bozich Inside the Hall is next on IU. And then Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports to talk Romeo Langford, Boston Celtics, NBA trade deadline, and more coming up later in the show. This is a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Thursday program. Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall joins us. Lee Kelly is also with me in studio. And Alex, last night we saw Purdue post 100-plus points in a big win for the Boilermakers at Mackey over Iowa. And it's sure not what I expected to see from the Boilermakers based on other recent results. But at times, this Purdue team has been able to play really well and score some points. And last night was one of those efforts.
Yeah, anytime you make 19 threes in a game, I'd say you're
wow,
on track to have a really good night, and that's what Purdue did last night. I think they had seven or eight guys make a three. I know the walk-on from Jeffersonville, Luce, he actually made two in the game, so everybody was getting in on the action. But, I mean, Purdue's shown us this a couple times this year. They beat, obviously, Michigan State at home. I mean, they blew them out. They blew out Wisconsin at home, and now they've blown out Iowa. It'll be interesting to see how that carries over into Saturday. I'm not usually one to believe in kind of momentum carrying from game to game, just because, especially if you're changing venues, Purdue's been a really good shooting team at home, and they've not been so good on the road. So, you know, we'll see how it translates to Saturday. But obviously a really good win for them, a game that they really needed to have. You know, they're 13-10. I think at this point they really need to keep winning games if they're going to have a chance to somehow sneak into the NCAA tournament. And so that was a game that they absolutely had to have. The other thing to keep in mind is they were playing Iowa, who is historically, under Fran McCaffrey, a really good offensive team and usually the Big Ten's worst defensive team. And You know, I'm really interested to see kind of Iowa to the rest of the season here. They've, you know, many years now under Fran McCaffrey, they've been in a really good position going into February and then kind of faded late in the season. I'm not sure if that's just kind of them getting worn out by Fran and his personality as the season goes along. But that's another that kind of storyline in the Big Ten to watch as the season winds down. But really good win for Purdue. And now they've got, you know, 2 days to prep for Indiana on Saturday. Indiana's had a week off. And it'll be interesting to see how they come out and play because their last couple performances have obviously not been good.
And the week off coming a good time, Alex, as far as Indiana, either physical or mental health going into this. I think I read somewhere this week Race Thompson has been having some issues. So this week off, fell at a good time?
I think so. Just because, I mean, you know, obviously the Michigan State win was great. And the Maryland game, you know, I thought they played well enough to win. They didn't play well enough defensively, but they played really well offensively. But then they turned around and just kind of fell apart at Penn State. I mean, the effort at Penn State was not where it needed to be. And at Ohio State, it was, you know, they only lost by 9, but it was a game where they just weren't ever really in the game. I mean, they weren't blown out, but Ohio State hasn't really been blowing anybody out lately. They haven't been playing particularly well. I would have thought Indiana would have been able to put up a little bit more of a fight. So we'll see if it's a good thing for them to have this week off. You know, Archie made some comments. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but kind of back to the drawing board and have to change things up. So we'll see kind of what the changes are that they introduced for Saturday. But more than anything else, I mean, this is not to make it too dramatic, but I mean, these next two games for Indiana, I think they're potentially season defining because you look at what they have coming up after this two-game stretch. I mean, they got Purdue and Iowa at home. Those are two winnable games, two games that they need to win. Because after that, they got 4 or 5 on the road. And this team has not beaten anybody on the road. So if they can't take care of business in these two games, I think the season at that point would be starting to slip through their fingers. And you have to start wondering, you know, if this team's going to have a chance to make the NCAA tournament. So these, to me, you never want to call anything a must-win at this point of the season, but I definitely think they need to win these two games, and we'll see how the players and the coaching staff respond. I mean, they can either use their past performances as kind of a rallying cry to realize that they have to come together and play better, or they can, if they come out and keep making some of the same mistakes. These are two games that could really go either way, but at home in the Big Ten, they need to take care of business and really in both of these contests.
It will be interesting to see where Indiana stands and really where the rest of the Big Ten stands after these next two games. It goes without saying, home games in the Big Ten Conference, you've got to take care of those with how tough it is to win on the road. We talked some yesterday, Alex. I did with Dustin Dopierak of The Athletic about Jerome Hunter and his recent minutes that he's been offering to this team and the fact that he is seeing maybe himself get closer to being back to a normal basketball player pre-health issues that kept him out for just about a year. And Dustin mentioned he thought really that Jerome Hunter in some ways could be a key for this team as far as a player that could provide a lift and provide some other help in different areas. As you look to these two very important games, and we know how tight this conference is right now, who's a player or two that you think Indiana just has to rely on to step up or to offer a certain benefit or a certain trait that they do to the team if they're going to close this thing strong, maybe win these next two games and turn the corner and head for the NCAA tournament? Is there a pair of players or a player that stands out that really Indiana's just got to have the rest of the way?
I mean, at the top of the list is Rob Phinisee for me. It's been that way for a while. I know in the preseason I basically called him Indiana's most important player, and I think he is. I mean, if he doesn't play well, I don't think they're going to win these next two games. I think, and that's the scary part, is you don't know what you're going to get from him. I'm I've been quite frankly a little bit surprised at how inconsistent he's been this year. I don't know if it's a mental thing or if it's a physical thing or a combination of the two. But I thought at this point of his career, you know, kind of coming down the stretch of his sophomore season, that he would have developed into more of a reliable, consistent player, and it just hasn't happened. And I think they're going to need him going at full speed. And the other two guys are Al Durham and Justin Smith, because they're upperclassmen. They've been kind of through this before. You know, I think Joey Brunk and Trace Jackson Davis have been the most consistent players on Indiana's team this year. I don't really think either one of those guys, if you're an IU fan, you don't worry about what you're going to get from those guys. I think you can kind of come into a game and know that both of those guys are going to show up and play relatively well, at least play hard, play with the same consistent effort. With Al Durham and Justin Smith, I just haven't seen it consistently enough. And if that's what you're getting out of your juniors, you know, I don't want to obviously throw Devontae Green into this category, because I just don't know on a game-to-game basis how much he's actually going to play. I mean, he's probably going to obviously play 15 minutes or so on the low side if things aren't going well, and can play a lot more if things are going well. But his great performances have been too far and few between to really expect anything. But to me, it's Finnessy, it's Justin Smith, and Al Durham. Those three guys really have to play with consistency and play smart if Indiana's going to beat good teams. If they don't, you know, anything can happen. I mean, this is to me, not to be overdramatic, this is kind of, to me, the season-defining stretch for Indiana. In my mind, if they're going to make the tournament, I think they need to win both of these games.
As we look at the latter part of the Big Ten season, we have anointed Michigan State to be the best team in the Big Ten earlier in the year, and then we gave Michigan a lot of praise and others in the conference. I heard a name mentioned yesterday that it's been a long time since I've heard that team mentioned. It was Illinois, and one of the writers that I had reading his column said he believed Illinois was playing the best basketball in the Big Ten right now. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that statement. Do I think they're the team that has the most upside, or the team that's most capable of going to the Final Four? No, I'd still give it to Michigan State. But at some point, you have to, you know, look at Illinois and respect what they've done. They've had quite the turnaround this year in non-conference play. They lost to Missouri on a neutral court. They lost at home to Miami of Florida, who's not very good in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, and it kind of looked like another ho-hum year for them. But they've turned it around. They've got four really good players on their team. You know, they're well coached. Credit to Brad Underwood for realizing that what he was doing defensively the last 2 years wasn't going to work in the Big Ten. He made the change defensively, and they've really improved on that end. And, you know, I wouldn't disagree with that. Right now they're playing as well, if not better, than anybody in the Big Ten, maybe even the country. So they're a team that's deserving of the success that they've had. I would still take Michigan State. If I'm filling out a bracket today, and you ask me, like, who has the best chance to go to the Final Four, I would still take Michigan State, because I just think Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman, you know, are those battle-tested guys that have been through the tournament before. I mean, Illinois hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since 2013. So once they do get in, it's uncharted territory for all these guys. And Michigan State, I obviously trust Tom Izzo and as a coach, and Cassius Winston, you know, I would take him, put him up against any point guard in the country. So I think they're the highest upside team. But Illinois, I mean, they're a legitimate threat to win the Big Ten title this year. So they've been great, and they've been a lot of, an interesting team to follow as the season has got along, because they've gotten better, and they seem to be playing their basketball here right at the best time.
Alex Bozich inside the hall, always with us on Thursdays. And how about last night, Romeo Langford getting the starting assignment in Boston, getting 28 minutes?
Yeah, that was good to see. I actually had a chance to watch a good portion of that game. I was stunned when somebody had texted me and said he was in the starting lineup. So I had to, you know, that was about 10 minutes before tip. And so I decided to turn it on. And, you know, offensively, he's not really involved that much. It's kind of weird to watch when he's in the game, because you're not used to seeing Romeo without the ball in his hands. But I'll say defensively, I was pretty impressed. I mean, he had that one weird possession where he fouled a guy on a three. I think it was Aaron Gordon, and he made the three and got a free throw out of it. That wasn't good. But other than that, I mean, he had a couple of blocks, I think, at the rim, and just looks really athletic and long out there, and can cover a lot of ground quickly. So I think that bodes well for his future. We'll see kind of what his role is going forward. I know Kemba Walker and Marcus Smart were both out. It's hard for me to imagine Romeo having much of a role on this team when it kind of gets down to the playoffs and all that. But what a good experience for him to have a chance to start in a game last night. And I saw somebody tweet, I don't know if you saw, I retweeted this, Matt. One of the reporters up there tweeted that Romeo texted his parents before the game mm-hmm. to tell him he was starting, and they saw it maybe, and they said, what, for Maine, and he meant in the NBA. So I saw another one that his mom thought he was still in the G League. So it's been a weird year for him. I'd still like to see them, you know, kind of maybe try to use him a little bit more offensively. I know they've got some really good players, but I think, you know, if he's coming off the bench in the future, I mean, I think he's a guy that can come in and get you six or eight points in a hurry. I mean, that's just kind of what he does. So hopefully he can grow into that as his career goes down the line here. But it's just, I don't know about you guys, it's just weird to see Romeo just standing off in the corner, not being utilized offensively. But I guess that's what happens when you come onto a team that has, you know, an all-star in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward. These guys are making 20 or 30 million a year. They're going to get the shots over a rookie who's just kind of cutting his teeth in the league.
Yeah, good point. Alex Bozich inside the hall. Alex, always enjoy our chats. And, of course, big one coming up for Indiana at home on Saturday. It's not only rival Purdue, but I thought you did a great job putting in perspective how important these next few games are for this Indiana team as far as the season and as far as NCAA tournament opportunities. We'll talk with you next week, okay?
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall. You can read lots of free content from Alex at InsideTheHall.com. Great coverage of the Hoosiers, and always enjoy his conversations with us on Thursday. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, Romeo Langford, we're going to cover all angles of Romeo, starting last night for Boston, his back and forth and back and forth from Boston to the G League, and also got to ask about the NBA trade deadline today. A lot of people want to know. I don't think the answer will be yes, but is there any chance at all Romeo could be moved, could be packaged, could be traded by this Boston team? Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports, he's the Boston Celtics writer. He joins us to talk about all of that and more surrounding Romeo next here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment on this Thursday program. Lee Kelly with me in studio. And with us from Boston, we have Chris Grinham. He's the Boston Celtics writer for Forbes Sports. And he joins us at a very opportune time because, Chris, when I contacted you earlier this week, had no idea that Wednesday would be the first career start for the Celtics by Romeo Langford, and we get to recap that and a lot more today. Were you surprised to see Romeo get the nod, or with injuries and with some other folks out of the game last night, did it surprise you that Romeo got the opportunity to start for the Celtics?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I think it surprised a lot of people. The Celtics have had a lot of injuries. They haven't been a team that have, you know, had the luxury of being at full strength a lot this year. But over the course of all those injuries, they've never turned to Romeo as that starter until last night. They've turned to Javonte Green and, you know, just other guys. Romeo even said that he was pretty surprised when he texted his parents before the game that he found out he was starting. They thought he was up in Maine with the G League team. So they were asking him if he was starting in Maine or if he was starting in Boston. So they were confused. But so I was surprised. Romeo was surprised. But he did a great job. He stepped right in and he filled his role and he did a really nice job.
break down his performance last night from the perspective of the Celtics that you have as someone that covers their games, as someone that truly knows the personnel, both the starters and other newcomers to the team. We know he had 28 minutes. We know he had 6 points. Looked to me like he did a very formidable job on defense. How do you think his performance last night fits in and is maybe being evaluated today by the Celtics staff?
Yeah, from a Celtics standpoint, he did his job, you know, I won't say to perfection because you always want to, you know, strive to get a little better, but he was tremendous. His main job, Brad Stevens tasked him with guarding Evan Fournier, who is, you know, a strong NBA wing. He's been in the NBA for a while. He scores at a pretty high clip. He guarded him for roughly 15 possessions last night, which came up just short of about 5 minutes total out of his 28 minutes. But that was the majority of his defensive matchup. He held him to only 2 points, which came on 2 free throws. His other responsibility was Terrence Ross, who's another 6'6 long wing who can stretch the floor and play, you know, pretty physical basketball. And he did a nice job with him. Over 6 partial possessions, he held him to no buckets, 0-2 shooting. So Romeo's job last night was, from the Celtics standpoint, it was a defensive matchup, which is why he, you know, ended up in the starting lineup. He wasn't looked for to score at a high volume last night. He did, provide some scoring here and there. He had 6 points on 3 of 4 shooting, so efficient on that end, but not something that's going to jump off the page at you. But he did his job. From a Celtics standpoint, he was very solid on the defensive end. And for someone who was, you know, thrust into the starting lineup at morning shoot around, he wasn't expected to start at all, probably just play a, you know, minimal minutes. He did a very nice job with, you know, short preparation.
With the trade deadline coming up at 3 o'clock, there has been some speculation that the Celtics could have been kind of highlighting him prior to that deadline. And maybe looking at trading him, or maybe looking at adding or subtracting some pieces on the current Celtics squad. Your thoughts on any and all of that?
Yeah, the Celtics are in an interesting position because they, you know, they've exceeded expectations to this point. And so any, you know, addition that they do make today, if they do make one, they want to try and keep that continuity that they've had that's brought them to, you know, 35 and 15, that's gotten them to this point. Of course, Romeo's name is going to be tossed in with these trade discussions. He was their top pick. He is an attractive young, asset for any NBA franchise. He's a long wing who, as he showcased last night, he can defend physical wings in the NBA, which is, you know, not all that common among a guy who only played 1 year in college. Normally it takes a little bit of time to gain that defensive edge. He seems to already have it. And I think a lot of that just comes with his basketball IQ. He's a smart player. He plays well off the ball. And I think that has a lot to do with it, but I don't see the Celtics dealing him. I think the only way they would get rid of him in a deal is if they're bringing back a relatively major piece. And I just don't really see that happening. I think if the Celtics do make a move, it'll be something relatively minor. And if it were to be a player that would require including someone like Romeo and potentially that Memphis Grizzlies first round pick that they own, I think it might be a little bit too much. So my prediction is if they do anything, it will be relatively small. I don't think Romeo will get traded. And if they don't do anything, they'll probably just approach the buyout market later this season and try and make an addition to their front court there.
Chris Grinham, he's the Boston Celtics writer for Forbes Sports, is our guest. We're talking Romeo Langford and more. I want to bring this up because this is actually how I connected with you. You had a terrific piece on Forbes Sports a few days ago about the Maine Red Claws, the Boston Celtics, how Brad Stevens and the Celtics organization views the G League, how they want to utilize their G League franchise team to circulate players back and forth. And, of course, lots has changed with the G League as far as their two-way opportunities now. Players can easily go back and forth. Each team, within reason, has their own G League affiliate now. Very well done piece. I know lots of people here in Southern Indiana, New Albany, enjoyed the piece because it gave them a little more background on what Romeo's been going through, why all the moves back and forth between Boston and Maine have taken place for players like him and Carson Edwards, Taco Fall, and others. Maybe preview that piece for someone that hasn't read it. We've got it retweeted so folks can check it out. But definitely an interesting take that Boston has on utilizing that G League team, and I'm sure it's one that is pretty consistent across the league.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, it kind of makes sense. You look at baseball and the way they utilize their minor league system and kind of use it as a coaching pipeline as well. Well, as the G League has developed over time and kind of continues to develop, the NBA has started doing that as well. And the Celtics, more so than other teams, really, really utilize that and use it as a minor league system for their coaches and a way to develop their coaching staff. You know, half their coaching staff right now that sits on their bench was – at one time, an NBA G League head coach. There's a couple guys on this coaching staff that were G League assistant coaches as well. One of them being Joe Mazzulla, who actually is assigned to Romeo, and he has worked diligently with Romeo during his first season in Boston. He's done a great job. You know, Romeo said after the game last night that when he found out he was starting, he immediately went right to the film room at TD Garden with Joe Mazzulla. They went through film on Evan Fournier. They went through film on Terrence Ross, and clearly he was very well prepared. And I think, you know, that's a testament, yes, to Romeo's game, but also to Mazzulla and the preparation that the Celtics coaching staff has. I know it's frustrating for, you know, people from New Albany or Hoosiers fans or things like that who have followed Romeo to watch him bounce back and forth to and from the G League, but really, it's extremely beneficial because he's in a situation here where the Celtics and Romeo himself, they're at a luxury where they don't have to rush his development. They can take their time. They don't need him to come in and contribute right away, which, yes, it's frustrating if you want to watch Romeo play, but for his development and for the, you know, longevity of his NBA career, it's extremely beneficial. And they saw it with Robert Williams last year. He took big time stride in the offseason, and he's been great this year. He's injured at the moment, but the luxury of being able to take your time with the development and utilize the G League where he can go down there, get more reps, and kind of improve his pro game, it really does go a long way, and I think it will help Romeo Langford. The Maine Red Claws head coach, when I was speaking with him last week, I was up there for their shoot-around and their Friday night game. When I was talking to him about Romeo, he was very pleased with his development, but he had an interesting thought. He said, yeah, you can look at film and you can go through drills as much as you want, but the best way to develop a player is playing. And when they come here, they can play, and they play far more than they do in the NBA. So Romeo has that benefit, and I think they're taking full advantage of it. So it only bodes well for his development.
Chris Grinham, Boston Celtics writer for Forbes Sports, our guest. Final question for you, Chris, as we wrap up today. As some of the Celtics players return from injuries and illnesses, the fact that Romeo has at least one start under his belt, the fact that he logged 28 minutes, do you think he'll be with the Boston roster now consistently for a while, no matter what his minutes look like? Or do you foresee that he could continue to bounce the rest of the way this season back and forth between Boston and Maine?
I think the majority of his time will be spent with Boston. He might have a sporadic trip here or there, say the Celtics have some time in between games or you know, the matchups just don't bode that well. Maybe they'll send him up to Maine to get a few reps if they've got a back-to-back or something like that. But I see the majority of his time being spent with the Celtics. Obviously, the Celtics trust him. They trusted him last night with guys like Fournier and Ross, and he did a great job. So it's clear that Brad Stevens and their staff, they trust him with quality minutes. I think that from a development standpoint, yeah, it could help going back and forth to Maine, but they're not concerned. He's not on a two-way contract, so they're not concerned with, you know, hitting a 45-day tally where he can only spend a certain amount of time with the Celtics. So that's not a worry. I think he, at this point, is going to benefit almost equally as much with getting those practice reps with the second unit in Boston as he would in Maine. So maybe a sporadic couple trips back and forth to Portland, but for the most part, I think he'll be in Boston.
Chris Grinham, Boston Celtics writer for Forbes Sports. Chris, thank you so much. Great piece earlier this week. We look forward to following your coverage and hopefully have you return from time to time to catch up on Romeo and what's going on in Boston.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great to have Chris Grinham with us from Forbes Sports. That's going to wrap things up for today. Lee Kelly, as always, thanks for being in studio on this Thursday. I'll be back Friday. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.